following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. The difference between wild Alaskan salmon and farmed Atlantic salmon is just as great as the differences between commodity pork and heritage breed pork. Huge! HeritageFoodsUSA.com is lining up a major social buy of sustainably harvested salmon in July and offering it at a phenomenal price to consumers. Check out HeritageFoodsUSA.com for more details on how to get in on this opportunity. Experience salmon the way it should be.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Heritage Radio Network. The show is The Naturalist, and we're on, again, one of our weekly shows. And we have two people here, two co-hosts. The first co-host is Carol.
Carol Butler. Good
and
morning.
And the second one is Bernie Wides. And you heard that music being played this morning? Well, for you music buffs there, and for us senior music buffs who had music appreciation in school.
Right.
That was Morning from the Piegan Suite by Grieg. And why am I playing this? Well, you'll hear in a minute. But first, Carol has a little current news to talk about.
Right. Today is Monday the 13th of June, right? And there is a mistake in the New York Times crossword puzzle
Uh-oh.
This morning.
Serious.
Which I came across. What's worse is they make this mistake periodically. This is the second time I've noticed it and written into them about it. So if you have your Times crossword puzzle, if you're listening to this today by any chance, 51 across says butterfly protector, which was puzzling to me. And the answer is cocoon, which, as anybody who knows about butterflies and all
and the, we do.
When we do from our conservatory, knows that butterflies do not make cocoons, that only moths make cocoons. So it's a very common mistake. We get asked about it every day in the conservatory. Kids come over or parents come over and say, oh, look, there's a butterfly in the cocoon. And we have to say no. So this doesn't help.
Okay, so what is the correct term?
Well, there is no butterfly protector. I mean, they just shed their skin and they pupate inside the chrysalis.
So it's the chrysalis. Which
well,
really
yeah,
protects
technically,
them.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of a cocoon, really.
Not really, because a butterfly has a chrysalis inside the cocoon. So it's not
okay.
equivalent, right? A butterfly
okay, right.
spins a cocoon and then sheds its last skin and is the same as what we see in the pupa stage, but it's just inside the cocoon. So it the moth has the protector.
The moth spins a cocoon out of silk.
Right, right.
Okay.
So there, Will Shorts.
Okay.
Shame on you.
Yes, Will Shorts. And he's on public radio, too, you know.
Right, so.
Okay. We'll have to let him know.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I sent in a blog because
okay.
I didn't see how else to communicate, so I already have notified them.
So, Carol, you did a good job this
All
morning.
Right. Just wanted to.
Hard at work, right, first thing in the morning.
Right.
Right. What time do you get your times in the morning?
Oh, it comes about 5:30.
Okay. So you had time to look at the crossword puzzle. Okay, to get back to the music this morning, it was Edvard Grieg, who was a Norwegian composer. And the reason that we played it this morning is that I just came back from Denmark and Norway. The Denmark part of the trip was a family visit to a 75th birthday party. It was very nice. And I say hello to all my Danish relatives out there, Brian and Vida and Julie and Rebecca and Peter and Kirsten and Noah. And David, and the newest addition is this young, beautiful little baby that Rebecca and Kim just had, Alma.
How do you say hello in Danish?
Hello.
Okay, hello. All right.
Or you could say welcome.
Okay.
And goodbye is farewell.
Farewell, I like that.
Like farewell, it's
right.
Very nice, farewell.
Okay.
That means be well. Okay, so I'm going to talk about Scandinavia. And Jack's going to put up a whole bunch of pictures on the site. And the first one, Jack, that you should put in the pictures is the map of Scandinavia.
Okay, and I'm going to put them on our Facebook page once we hear the program. I'll put them on tonight.
Yes. So Scandinavia refers to the part of Europe that has three countries that we know about, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland is referred to as Scandinavia, even though the Finnish language is different than the rest of the Scandinavian languages. So where did Scandinavia get its name? Well, I'll give you a little history on that. Scandinavia is a peninsula in Europe.
Right, I can picture it.
Picture it. It sticks out into the North Sea.
Right.
And to get there, you'd have to go all the way around through Germany, Poland, and through Russia, and get around the top of Scandinavia, mm-hmm. which is connected to the rest of Europe. Okay, so... well, you know, it's a peninsula, but it wasn't always a peninsula. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But the name Scandinavia comes from an old word, Skanda, which refers to the people who lived in this part of Europe.
That was an ethnic group, were the Skandas?
Well, no, but it's very complicated because now... they have three different cultures.
Right.
But at one time, it was Old Norse culture, mm-hmm. and the language was Old Norse.
Would be interesting how the three cultures developed in that small area.
Yeah, well, they're very really, similar to each other.
Right.
Because if you you understand Danish, you can understand a little Swedish,
right.
and you could understand some Norwegian, and the same for the other countries.
Right.
Because they're very similar. Maybe you'd say they were dialects of this, of this language. Okay? So, now... I'm going to talk about the Ice Age.
All right.
Okay, we all don't remember the Ice Age because...
very vaguely.
You remember it vaguely? When you lived in the Bronx, the Ice Age?
Very vaguely, yes.
Well, what happened was the last Ice Age started 100,000 years ago. And slowly, 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 the Earth cooled off. And the height of the Earth Age was about 10,000 years ago.
Right.
Okay? So what happened? If you look at the map of Scandinavia, you'll see all those countries on the map that I put up were covered by ice.
Right.
The ice started in the Arctic and moved down. And the chain of mountains that separate Norway from Sweden, Norway and Sweden share this part of the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a chain of mountains that runs up the spine of this peninsula. Some of them are 8,000 feet high,
mm-hmm.
the mountains. So they're substantial mountains.
Right.
So when the Ice Age started, the snow that was normally on top of those mountains got thicker and thicker and thicker, and ice and ice and ice. And the glaciers gradually travel down those mountains to fill up the valleys and cover the land.
Okay.
Okay. Now, people wonder how thick the ice was.
I was wondering that, yes.
I could tell that right away, you know. If you want to make ice cubes, you have a never-ending supply. Okay, the ice was 2.5 kilometers thick.
Wow.
Okay, and that's equivalent to probably 2-something miles thick, because a kilometer is 0.6 of a mile.
Right.
So if you take it and you multiply it out, it probably comes out a little over 2 miles thick. So picture this ice.
I'll figure it out.
Okay, figure it out. Figure this ice on top of an 8,000-foot mountain, add on another 2 miles, and you have substantial ice on the mountains. Okay? Carol's figuring it out now because she...
Keep talking. It'll take me a while.
Okay, so what happened was the Earth went into an ice age, and in North America, it's called... It was
2.5 kilometers equals a mile.
Does it?
2.2 kilometers equals a mile.
Okay.
Because they're smaller than miles.
They're 0.6 of a mile.
Right. So, yeah, but I remember it as 2.2.
Okay.
So it means it's roughly a mile.
A mile thick. So that's 5,000 feet a mile.
That's correct.
Okay. So if you had 5,000 feet on top of 10,000 feet.
It makes 15.
It makes a very high mountain. Okay. So at that time, there were no people living in this part of the world. I think most of the population was in the south of Europe and Asia and all those places. This is, as I said, the temperature started to cool down 100,000 years ago.
Okay.
And slowly got colder and colder and colder and colder. And because it was so cold, that there was nobody living in this area. And when the ice, the glaciers got very thick, they started to move, okay? And they moved down the mountains into the river valleys from this mountain chain and kept flowing and covered up all the land in Scandinavia, down to Denmark. So if you look on the map of Denmark, you see it's a little tiny country, right? It's not even connected to the peninsula. It's below it. It's adjacent to Germany and I think maybe Poland, but I'm not sure. So why do we care about this glacier? Okay, we care about this glacier is because the big attraction in Norway is the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what the glaciers did when they moved down the river valleys, they scoured out the river valleys, because when the glacier moves along, it's like a giant bulldozer, and whatever in front of it, rocks, it grabs the rocks and carries it along.
Right.
So the bottom of the glacier ends up like rough sandpaper.
Scraping
the rocks.
Evidence of where the glacier was.
Yeah. Like in Central Park, we have the scratch marks or the striations of the glacier.
Right.
So what happened in these countries was that the glaciers removed all the soil that was there and gouged out the river valleys, because a river valley normally is V-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a river valley, it's V-shaped with the river in the middle.
Right.
Okay. Glacial valleys are U-shaped, because when they come down and scrape their path in the valleys, it's not the river now that's making the valley, it's the ice. Then the ice could go up 2,000-4,000 feet on the sides of the valleys,
mm-hmm.
and it scours it out.
Okay.
And that's how the fjords were born.
All right.
The famous fjords in Norway and other countries. Okay? And also what happened was, when the glaciers, it was the peak of the glacial area, about 12,000 years ago, there was no water surrounding these countries.
Huh.
If you look at the map, you'll see there's the Baltic Sea,
and
there's another one,
water.
The Botha Sea, and there's a passage between Norway and Denmark out to the North Sea.
Right.
There was no water. The Atlantic Ocean was about a couple of hundred feet lower than it is today.
Mm.
So if you wanted to go to England, the present British Isles, you could walk across from Denmark.
Yeah.
And across, I don't know how wide the English Channel is these days, but it's probably not too wide.
It's not that wide, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can do it in a boat in a couple of hours. So there was no water there.
Mm.
So it wasn't the peninsula at that time. It was all solid land.
Interesting.
Okay? So that's what formed the countries.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually Then
the water just filled in around them, I guess.
And then when the glacial age was coming to an end,
mm-hmm.
the sea levels rose,
right.
and the water flowed in between Norway and Denmark, and flowed in to form the Baltic Sea, and there's another sea called the Botha Sea, I think it's pronounced, making the present geology of the country.
All right.
So
interesting.
You know, that's one of the theories about how North America was settled.
Mm-hmm.
The Bering Straits between Alaska and Siberia during the Ice Age, there was no water in between
there,
because the ocean levels had lowered so much that there was a land bridge between.
That's the first time we had horses in this country. They came across from Asia, across that land bridge.
Right. Okay, so that's a little bit about the geology of the area. And I went to Europe. I said that the first part of the trip was to Denmark to go to a family party. It was very nice. And then we flew from Copenhagen, mm-hmm. which is the capital city of Denmark, to Bergen. And Bergen is one of the two main cities in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the southwest side of Norway, and it's on a fjord. Almost everything in Norway is on a fjord, because there's so many fjords.
Right.
Well, and remember, what a fjord is, it's a drowned river valley, really, that the sea has moved in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we went to Bergen. It's a small town. It probably has 500,000 people. And it's the town is situated on the side of a hill going up. So if you look at the houses in Bergen, they look like toy houses marching up the side of the hill. And the big attraction in Bergen is there's a line of very old, from 15th century buildings that were built as warehouses and storehouses for merchandise. And there was a league called the Hanseatic League that the Germans formed. It was like a monopoly to control trade in that part of the world. So the buildings are still there, and they've been made into museums, and they're all painted different colors, and they really look beautiful. So that's a big attraction. What we did was, since there was a music festival going on at that time in Bergen. We went to the music festival and caught one of the free concerts at the university, which is very nice. And the concert hall that these kids played in was called Grieg Hall because of Edvard Grieg is the most famous musician from Norway. And we went to visit Grieg's house because I really love Grieg's music, and I figured it would be nice to go see where he wrote his music. So we took a tram, which is like a trolley car, out of the city of Oslo, about 20 miles, not Oslo, excuse me, Bergen, and we took the tram up to right near Grieg's house. Then we had to take a taxi because it didn't go close enough, and it was raining. That's another thing about Norway. They get 300 days of rain a year. Okay, everything is lush and green and beautiful, but if you travel to Norway, you have to be prepared for it. Mm. Bring your rain gear and your umbrellas because it's not cold.
Right.
It was 70 degrees and
rain.
So it was pleasant. So we went to visit Grieg's house, and he built this beautiful house right on a cliff overlooking the fjord. And by the way, fjord is spelled F-J-O-Y-D, fjord. And the word ford, the English word, to ford a river, comes from fjord.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyhow, so we went to his house, which was a beautiful house. We got a nice tour from a young lady. And he was a very small man, like me, short guy. And he was a piano player. He had trouble reaching the pedals of the piano.
Huh.
So what he did was he contacted the Steinway Company, which at that time I think was in Germany. I think it was Germany. And they made a special piano for him with shorter legs. Hmm. So they had that piano in his house. And I wanted to sit down at it and try it out. But, you know, she said, no, you can't do that. You know, but, so that was a very, very nice visit. And behind his house was his composer's cottage that he made for himself, where he could go off by himself and do his composing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the pictures, you'll see a picture of a beautiful cottage painted sort of a red color.
Okay.
And behind it is the fjord. And Janet's standing in front of it with an umbrella, so you can get the scale of it.
Oh,
okay.
Very good.
It was a beautiful place to visit, even in the rain. We visited the house, and there's a little museum, of course. Mm-hmm. You have to have a little museum there. And they played his music in the museum. It was very nice. And now there's a... Okay, 2 minutes left of this first. There's a beautiful concert hall that was built where they have concerts there now.
Oh, very nice.
So it's a very nice place to visit. Okay, so from Grieg's house, we went back into town into Bergen. And we stayed in Bergen two nights at a very nice hotel. And the other thing in Norway is the cost of living there is very expensive.
Why don't you save that for the second section? Because that's really interesting.
It is, yeah. So what we did was we left Bergen, and we had booked this trip beforehand from a travel agent that did a very nice job. Her name was Ellie Tannenbaum. And because a friend of ours had gone last year, and he said, do this trip. It's called Norway in a Nutshell, and you pick the parts you want to do, and they book it all for you, all the transportation, the hotels and everything. For a change, we did that. Usually we do it on our own, but we did it, and it worked out beautifully. So from there, we took multiple means of transportation to get to one of the fjords, because we were going to take a boat ride up the fjord and go to a small little town at the head of one of the fjords.
Why don't we stop and leave that as a cliffhanger?
Okay. And there are a lot of cliffs in Norway to hang from.
As a fjord hanger.
A fjord hanger. Okay, so we'll continue in a minute. Jack, we'll take a break now. And, here comes the music again. And this is Bernie Wides and Carol Butler talking about my recent trip to Norway.
Thank you. Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, I'm back on the air, and that music was in the Hall of the Mountain King. It's a perfect music for Norway.
Terrific.
Wasn't that perfect?
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of mountains in Norway, and they even say they have trolls in Norway. I didn't get to see one, but I think if you drink enough beer or whiskey, you can see the trolls.
Right. Yeah. What do they drink there? Is there a local drink?
It's like, they drink a lot of vodka, and then there's a drink like aquavit.
Oh, okay, right.
Which
is
white lightning kind of stuff.
Right.
And what you're supposed to do, if you're eating herring or something like that, you take a shot of aquavit.
It's a little glass.
A little shot glass. To clear your palate.
Right.
And then you go off to something else.
Right.
I personally don't like aquavit, but
I think I've had it. I think it was nice. I've had it when you have, like you say, caviar or lox or something
That's
like that.
That's traditional to have
at the Russian tea room.
Oh,
I had
right.
it once. Yeah.
Okay, so from Bergen, we took this combination of a bus, a train, and a boat.
Okay.
To get to this little town called Flun or Flan, I still can't pronounce it. It's spelled F L A N, like Flan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like.
But it's probably not pronounced that way.
No, it's pronounced Flun.
Okay.
Okay. And it's a very tiny place. So we took the railroad, which was a pretty nice ride, and we got off and we got a bus. And the bus took us over the mountain that was adjacent to the fjord. And this was a really hairpin turn ride. And, you know, you thought the bus was going to flip over because constantly hairpin turns. And at the bottom of it is the fjord, but at the top of it we came over this mountain and you could see all the waterfalls. It was really beautiful. Okay, so we get to the bottom of the mountain with the bus, and there's the ferry waiting for us. So we get on the ferry, and the ferry's taking us up the fjord, which is this river valley, something like the Palisades in the Hudson.
Right,
looks something like a fjord. And we went up on it, and of course it was overcast and drizzling a little bit, but it was a very pretty ride. And it took us about 3 hours, and we got to this little tiny town. And the only purpose of that town is it's a stop on the mountain railroad, okay? And it's the cruise ships come in there. The fjords are very deep. They're deep enough for cruise ships to come in, because when the glaciers scoured out these valleys, they really scoured them out. And you know, for a cruise ship, you probably need 50, 60 feet of water easily,
at least,
right?
Yeah.
So our hotel was right on the shore, and this big cruise ship came right in, you know, and they stayed a couple of hours. People got off, they shopped, and then they took off. But it was a very pretty place. We stayed there for 2 nights, and we took a great hike. Now, since I'm not a great hiker anymore, we didn't go up any of the mountains, but there was a road that went all around the fjord.
Mm.
And we walked along that road, and it was beautiful. We must have walked about 4 miles out and back, and the sun came out, which was extraordinary.
Very nice.
Yeah, and it was very nice. And there was a fossils park alongside of this park, and it was very hard to understand what was going on. There were plaques on rocks with pictures of fossils, early antelope or deer, and primitive Stone Age folks with weapons and all that stuff. And the sign said, "This fossil is in such and such a place. This fossil is in such and such a place that they found."
Okay.
Okay. But what they did was, they did in like topiary on this slope, they with shrubbery, they did the outline of the animal. So if it was a deer or an antelope, they did it in shrubbery. We didn't realize at first. Nobody pointed it out. But then as we walked away, we said, "Look, there's the animal."
Wow.
So it was a beautiful spot. It was very nice. We walked along. There were about 15 of these. But I think we would have preferred to see the petroglyphs itself.
Sure,
but
sure.
Of course, they moved them to a museum.
Right.
They didn't want them to be destroyed. So that was an interesting thing. So from Flan or Flun or Flom, we were going to go to Oslo, which is the capital city. And we took the mountain railroad. And on the photographs, I took a photograph of a drawing of this mountain range, and the red line at the bottom is the train. Mm-hmm. And the train goes up the valley into the mountains. Mm-hmm. And an interesting thing, if you look at this picture, this drawing of the mountains, all the mountaintops are rounded over. Uh-huh. And they're flattened out.
Right.
Now, why is that?
Is that from the glacier?
That's from the glacier. Okay. And if you go to the Catskills, New York State, they're all rounded over. Same reason. The glaciers came down. Glaciers were about a mile thick when they came down through New York State. And some of them were thicker, and they rounded out the mountains.
Yeah.
And the way we can tell if they traveled over the mountain or around it is the scratch marks under the striations. So there, since the mountains were really high when the glacier was on it, there was a lot of ice.
Right.
And it was pretty thick. What'd you figure? About
a mile.
A mile thick of ice. So that does a lot of scratching and digging out.
Yes, indeed.
So therefore, the mountain railroad runs up one of these valleys, and it's a spectacular ride. Mm. You can, on one side, you have the side of the mountain, the other side are valleys, and you think the train's going to go over the edge, but they took them 20 years to build this railroad. It's only 20 miles long.
Okay.
So they really struggled. And if you look down, you see the valleys and the waterfalls. It's really very pretty. So we took that, and we had to transfer another train, and then we got to Oslo. Oslo is the main city in Norway. It's a big city. I don't know what the population is. I don't remember, but maybe it's 750,000. In the city. The whole country doesn't have a whole big population.
Right, right.
But the economy of Norway is very good now because they've discovered oil in the North Sea, which is adjacent to Norway, and they're doing very well. And what the government does, the government controls the oil and the funds from the oil, and everybody in the country gets a cut of the money.
Right, okay.
They establish savings things for kids when they're born, and they put the money away for them, and they can get it, I don't know, when they're 18 or 21. So the Norwegians really don't have to worry about anything.
Okay.
And they have womb-to-tomb health care.
Okay.
It's terrific health care. They have no worries about that. They just have to worry about what they're going to do with their lives. But that's it.
Right. And how they can afford a McDonald's, right?
So the food is very expensive in Norway. First of all, only 7% of the land is arable. That means you can plant on it. The rest of it is all mountains and steep valleys. So they have to import a lot of their food. And in fact, our cousins from Denmark said that the Norwegians take the ferry over to Denmark to go shopping.
Right.
Because the food's so much cheaper in Denmark. Denmark is fairly flat, just rolling hills, because the glaciers didn't make it as far as Denmark. Just the terminal moraine, which is all the
It's so strange, though, because it's not so remote. I mean, there are other countries all around it. It's amazing to me that everything is so expensive. Bernie was saying when we were coming here that they went to a McDonald's, and it was $10 equivalent for a McDonald's hamburger.
Right.
It's hard to... And you went out to dinner with Janet, and it was $100
each. $100
each
for a three-course meal in a restaurant.
It's just amazing.
It is. And the taxes are very high. I think that's part of it, because they use the taxes, for their health care.
Right.
So the Norwegians are doing well. So
the Norwegians eat at home, I'm sure.
They do. A lot eat home. But they were... You couldn't tell who was eating in the restaurants with us. Were they tourists or were they...
Right.
You couldn't tell. Okay. So, and what they have in Oslo that we could really use in New York City is a pedestrian street. And Copenhagen has it too. It's a very wide street.
Amsterdam has it.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It runs through the heart of the city. Right. There's no traffic except for rare occasions. And it's a main thoroughfare. It's like Fifth Avenue without traffic.
That's right.
So it's really terrific. So we could use that in New York City. Okay, we went to a lot of museums in Oslo because we're museum folks. And the first museum we went to was the Fram Museum. Now, the Fram Museum holds a ship. This ship is in the museum. That's the whole museum is this ship. And this is the ship that Amundsen used to go to Antarctica.
Oh, we had that.
Remember the
idea? Oh, yes. We had a big exhibition on it at the museum.
Right. So and I worked that exhibit
in
the museum.
Yes, you did, yeah.
It was the race to the South Pole
between
Amundsen and Scott, who was the British guy, and Amundsen was the Norwegian guy.
Right.
So this museum had the Fram in it, the ship that they used to go to Antarctica.
Right, cool.
And it was very good. It was a good tour of the ship. You could walk around. And by the way, the signage was in English in most of these museums, which was very nice. Because Norwegian, we don't take Norwegian in school.
Right, very few people do.
So that was a good tour of the ship. Then we went to another museum that was adjacent to this museum. In fact, we took a ferry in the Oslo Harbor across the bay, like in San Francisco, mm-hmm. to go to these museums. They were on like an outskirts of the city. So we went to the Kon-Tiki Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So those of us of a certain age can remember Thor Heyerdahl,
sure.
and the Kon-Tiki and the Ra. Okay? So this was in the late 40s, 1948, 47, right after the Second World War. This guy, Thor Heyerdahl, who was a scientist, I don't know, he was probably an anthropologist.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what he was. But he got together some friends who had met each other during the resistance in World War II. Norway was invaded by Germany, as Denmark was also in World War II. The Germans had captured all of Europe. So some of these guys were in the resistance to, you know, fight off the Germans. So anyhow, he got all these friends together, and he said, you know what, I have this theory that humans could have gotten to North America and Central America and South America from Africa. And he said, because the Egyptians build these boats out of papyrus. They're reed boats. And he said, I think they could have built a reed boat to cross the Atlantic.
Okay.
So he got funding for it, and he went to Egypt, and they got river reeds, they're papyrus, you know, like that you make paper from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they made these reed boat, and they sailed it across from North Africa to the Caribbean. And it almost got there.
Right, it almost, right.
When it got near the Caribbean, it started to sink.
It fell apart.
Fell apart. So what he said, you know what? We have to build a better reed boat.
Right.
So I think he brought back from South America some Native Americans from down there who really knew how to build reed boats.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought them back, and they built another one. And they used another technique. And this time, he set sail. Oh, the name of the boat was the Ra. R-A, which is the sun god of Egypt.
Yes.
And the sun god travels across the sky, and some of the legends say it travels by boat across the sky. So he built another one called the Ra II, and he did it successfully, proving that people could have emigrated mm-hmm. to the, quotes, New World by just sailing across the Atlantic on a sailing ship.
Right, so it was a raft with a sail on it.
It was a
right?
raft with a sail, very basic, one big square sail.
Yes.
Okay, and... But the thing that Thor Heyerdahl knew and that most of the explorers knew is that there's a current,
right.
the Gulf Stream, which runs along the eastern coast of the United States. It starts in the Gulf of Mexico,
right.
goes around Florida, goes up, and it goes across the Atlantic to England, to the North Sea, and then it goes down along the coast of Europe and off the Canary Islands, and then it goes back to South
right.
America. So they knew about that current. So they took the current across, which helped them in sailing
sure.
across. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so after that adventure, he became fairly famous, and he got more funding, and he got a film crew and the whole business. Then he had another theory that people could have populated South America from Polynesia.
Mm.
The Polynesia referred to all these islands in the South Pacific.
He was just looking for an excuse to do more sailing.
That's right.
Now that he had
funding.
Right.
Right. So... I don't know how he decided to go from South America to Polynesia and not the other way around,
right.
but he did. And this time he said, we're going to build a raft out of balsa wood. So those of us who, when we were kids, we built model airplanes
sure.
out of balsa wood. It was featherlight wood.
Right, I did that,
and
sure.
they used to use balsa wood for life jackets
right.
in World War II because it was so light and it floats
oh,
well.
I didn't know that. That's
yeah.
interesting.
They used balsa and sometimes kapok, which is like...
Kapok is a stuffing. We used to use that in life jackets
yeah, right.
on the boat.
I think that's what they use mostly. But anyhow, so he built this balsa raft, which was a raft with a cabin on it, and they made it into a movie and a book, and it was an Oscar-winning movie. So he went to that museum where the original Kon-Tiki is there in the museum, and the original Ra is in the museum.
Interesting.
It was fascinating. It was really, I loved it because I remember all these things happening, and it was a great, great thing to see. Okay, so... So Thor Heyerdahl became very famous. We spoke about the boats, right, and all that. Okay. And the next museum we went to was the Viking Ships Museum. It was terrific in Oslo. You could go from one museum to the other.
Yes.
Just on a bus. It was terrific. So the Viking Museum, I remember, I was in Oslo about 25 years ago, and I remember this great museum and some other things that I had seen last time I was there. And the thing that I remembered also, just to talk about food a minute, was that the fishing boats would come into Oslo Harbor right in front of City Hall called the Rod House, and they would sell shrimp from the boats. They would cook them in seawater.
Oh.
They were little red shrimp called reka, which means red, I think, and they would sell them. And I don't know what, I don't remember what we paid that time for it, but now, of course, it's probably six times the price.
Were they still doing
that? They're still doing it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They're still doing it, yeah.
Did you have some?
No, we didn't have a chance because we were there on a Sunday in the harbor, and they don't do it on Sunday, Monday. I was going to go back and bring some back to my friend Bernie because he was on that trip with me. How much time left, Jack? Okay. 2 minutes left. Okay, I'm going to talk about the Viking Ship Museum. Everybody knows what the Viking ships look like. They're beautiful, graceful ships, and I have pictures of them on the site. That's why I put so many pictures up, Jack, of the Viking ships. And they have four Viking ships in this beautiful building. It looks like a church because it's in the shape of a cross, like the nave of a cathedral.
Right.
And one, there's one ship in each of these naves.
Oh, nice.
And Carol, you'll be interested in this. The ships were lapstrake.
Okay, I know
okay?
what
that is. Okay, so...
Overlapping strips on the side
right.
of the ship, yeah.
The planking of the ship is overlaps, like roof shingles.
Yeah.
Okay? The other thing is corbel, but you have a smooth side of a Holtz corbel, or it's lapstrake, or clinker is another word for that. So the Vikings made their ships lapstrake, and they were very flexible and could take a lot of beating like that. They were very maneuverable because they could sail into the wind, okay? You know, square rig ships couldn't do that in the old days. They couldn't go close to the wind.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, so the ships were beautiful, and the Vikings, that's a whole nother saga of history of the Norwegians. And you know that the Vikings were such good sailors that they covered almost all of the known world in that time. They went way up the Rhine River, they crossed into England, they went to Iceland, and they came to North America.
Yes, they did.
They did. So they were great sailors. They were also, you know, like pirates, or pillaging and raping and doing all like leisure time activities. But they also settled in places. Mm-hmm. They established a settlement in England and I think in Greenland also and in North America.
North America, certainly, yeah.
So they were great sailors and these are open boats. They must have had some cover for bad weather, I'm sure. But in the museum, they just showed them as open boats. Mm. But, you know, they were sailing out of Norway. It's cold in the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but they were terrific sailors. And they were traders and they traded goods. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is the churches in Norway. They're called stave churches, and they're built of wood.
Hmm.
And they're beautiful structures because the roof shingles are beautifully wood like they look like feathers on a bird, you know, what the old roof shingles look like. They overlap each other. They're shaped.
Fluted.
In fact, they look like butterfly scales.
Yeah.
And... on the roof of these churches, there are dragon heads and crosses.
Wow.
Okay? So the transition from the pagan Old Norse religion to Christianity took 300 years because they really didn't want to become Christians because they had all their old gods. They had Odin and Thor and a whole pantheon of other gods. Now, what the job of the dragons were on the roofs of the buildings was to ward off evil spirits. So when they converted to Christianity, they didn't want to take a chance.
Left the dragons
they
just
left
to be
the
sure.
dragons
right, I love
on
it.
The roof of each right. each of the cardinal directions of the right. compass, they had a dragon.
Right.
And you'll see on the pictures, there was a brewery built in Flon, next to our hotel that was making great beer.
Okay.
And the shape of the building looked like a church. And on the roof, guess what they had?
A dragon, I hope.
Four dragons.
Good. Okay.
Okay. So when you had a couple of those beers, which were really strong, you walk out and you look on the roof, maybe you saw trolls and dragons
right.
dancing around. I don't know.
Excellent.
But, we went to a reconstructed village where they had moved, like Williamsburg and Old Bethpage on Long Island, where they move old buildings to a site, and it's in different time periods. And we had time enough to go into this church, and they're called stave churches because they're built of planks of wood vertically along the sides of the building. And the thing that fascinated me was the seeing the dragons on the roof. And I looked it up in my resources. And, Jack, do I have a minute left? 1 minute? Okay. I'm going to read this from my stuff.
Your famous resource, yeah. right.
The transition from paganism to Christianity in Scandinavia was not an easy one for the Scandinavians to make. The Swedish writer, this guy Moberg, called it the 300-year war of transitioning to Christianity. Mm. From the time of the appearance of the first Christian missionaries in the early 19th century until the final conversions in the 11th and 12th centuries, pagan Scandinavia was under constant pressure from the forces of the White Christ, in quotation marks. When leaders converted, pressure on the people was increased, of course. And this guy, Tryggvason, his forced conversion in Norway, he was like a leader, or he was a king, I don't know what he was, as well as Charlemagne's 200 years before him in Saxony, were no less brutal than any pagan Viking raid. Hmm. So it was a conversion by force,
right.
Just like the Catholics
like the
had
Crusades,
done
yeah.
the Crusades, and also in the Americas.
Right.
It was a forced conversion. The transition between paganism and Christianity, however brutal and uncertain it might have been, nevertheless saw a merging of cultures and beliefs. The art and architecture of the time certainly demonstrate this. We see it reflected in various elements of staged church construction.
I wonder why they were motivated to convert, why it was, if they really were so resistant.
I really don't know.
Probably it was politically expedient. Yeah.
So that's the end of my visit to Scandinavia.
Okay.
And
very interesting.
Tune in next week, because next week Carol is going to do a show on some research in
bugs
and bacteria.
Right.
And fascinating stuff, how you could tell people by the kind of bugs they have in their
Correct.
Gut.
Correct.
So we'll be back next week for another show, and Carol will be the lead for next week.
All right. So signing off, this is
signing
The Naturalist,
off.
Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wise.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. The USDA has introduced the MyPlate icon. I'm sure you've all seen that in the news, replacing the food pyramid that was in use for 19 years. This colorful icon contains portions of fruits, vegetables, grains, protein, and a little side dish of dairy. It can be viewed at www.choosemyplate.gov. It does look like a plate. It's divided into four quadrants. They are surprisingly similarly sized. Vegetables, fruits, proteins, grains. The veg are definitely a little bit larger than the other groups, but protein was really big. I was surprised. I thought we were supposed to eat less meat. Each component of the plate can be clicked on for a drop-down menu that explains portion size, healthy choices, nutritional information, etc. It offers significantly more information to consumers, but it is a little bit more complicated to use. We'll see if people actually look at it. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
HeritageRadioNetwork.com has its own architecture show dedicated to the built environment, hosted by Curtis B. Wayne. Check out a small clip of Burning Down the House.
So if we look at tall buildings and we talk about the wind blowing over them, we have all these different variants on, is it a horizontal rotor, like the big wind turbines that you see off of Aarhus in Denmark, I think it's where it is, and the local people are very proud of it. Or Falmouth, where the locals are not happy at all. Out west, there are enormous wind farms, but they're far from habitations. And so the low-frequency sound that's generated by those turbines is not a problem. But what we don't want in terms of taking this notion, this notion of the future and making it beautiful and bright and clean and silent, is to create.
Want to hear more? Well, tune in live to Burning Down the House every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. or check out past episodes in our archive or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening.